Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rebel Rouser, Mitch Bergeron.
And it's the one and only Tornado Tony Pennycow.
We got plenty of news tidbits to bring to everybody today, as well as a special guest, not the Dave Thomas everybody might think, not the Wendy's guy, but the TNT fight management guy who orchestrated the Tito Ortiz deal with Bellator. That coincidentally put off the fight between Rampage Jackson and Roy Jones Jr., which apparently, from what I heard today, was actually supposed to be both a boxing match and an MMA fight between the two of them, which is kind of a surprise. Big surprise to me, anyway. I didn't think that would have been possible to get Roy Jones Jr. to agree, something like that. I had never heard of him training or anything like that, so that's kind of a strange little tidbit that Rampage mentioned in a recent interview. It's at bloodyelbow.com, and I basically just said that it's still not off the table. And it could happen, but no details on when. But the other Roy Jones Jr. news I've been putting out on the blog lately, a couple stories about our former guests, both our former guests, I guess, Roy Jones Jr. and Bobby, talking about a title fight somehow, setting something up for November, which is the same month they're talking about doing. Well, they've already put together the pay-per-view card there with Tito versus Brent. So, all right, I don't know what happened there, but anyway, I was trying to mention that it was just a big event at the Monte Carlo, the first ever induction of Hall of Famers to the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame, and a couple interesting guests, a few. Of course, Mike Tyson was there, Larry Holmes, Don King, Bob Arum, Mills Lane was even there. And we've had one of his, or both of his kids on before, years ago. You know. But interestingly enough, before Mike Tyson spoke last at the event, he walked over to Mills Lane and laid his cheek on his head and hugged him a little bit there. So that was kind of interesting, seeing as that was the same referee that disqualified him in the bike fight.
I really didn't know. I knew Mills had the stroke. I guess that's about how many years now? Like I said, I didn't know he was still in as bad shape as he is. I knew he was on the road to recovery, and I know he was having, you know, he still had some issues. But I really didn't realize it until I got my last Rim magazine, and I was reading about this year's International Boxing Hall of Fame in Canastota, New York. And, you know, obviously the big talk was, you know, Arturo Gatti, and how, like, his manager, Pat Lynch, his mother, and then his daughter, who was from a previous relationship before he got hooked up with Amanda Rodriguez, they got up there and they spoke on his behalf. But then they said, like, Mills Lane was unable to speak. I mean, I saw the one picture of him, and it looks like he had his right arm in a sling.
Mm-hmm.
But he was unable to speak, and I believe one or both of his sons had to speak on his behalf.
Yeah, I remember when we talked. Yeah. all kinds of different ideas that they had on a treat stroke situation. But the other night at this event, and of course Mike Tyson obviously acknowledged him, and I bet it was you know, all he could do to avoid going after Don King.
Right.
Don King was there, but Larry Holmes, I guess, really stole the show, according to this report from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Larry Holmes, this says, worked the crowd like a stand-up comic, refusing to give up the ring as he talked about his career, and surprisingly, his father, whom he once sued for taking his money without asking. And Holmes said, I don't care if he took the money because he always gave me more money. Floyd Mayweather Jr. was there. He actually said some nice things about Bob Arum. So I don't know what was in the punch bowl, but everybody was getting along, I guess.
I mean, we got to see how good Larry can be with the microphone up when we were in Boston last year.
Right. Exactly. I figured you'd bring that up. I got a good picture of him outside of George's care, and apparently he was a big hit there with everybody, too, singing. And
he was singing into a spoon.
Yes.
speaking of that, Mark Shannon statue, a few weeks ago, I was over at my one friend's house, and he was going through some songs on his MP3 player or that he has on his iPhone or however he has it done. And he asked me if I recognized the one song. He goes, it was one of the few redeeming qualities of Rocky V. And he put that song on by Elton John, Measure of a Man. And he asked, and he goes, you got to really listen to the words. I'm like, asshole, I know this song. He said, I was like, dude, I've known this song since Rocky V came out. And actually, I was talking about Rocky V last night on the KO Digest Facebook page. We were lampooning the movie. But I was like, you know, I used that song when I did my photos for the Marsh Catcher dedication. Because, you know, I've never seen that video. So I showed it to him. And so he's watching it, you know, with the song Measure of a Man. And then he finally got to the pictures of a statue. He goes, how big is that thing? I'm like, dude, it's pretty damn big. I said, wait till you see the one of me standing in front of it. He got to that. He's like, yeah, you only come up to the calf. I'm like, yeah, that's how big it is, dude. Yeah. He couldn't believe it. He was shocked.
Literally.
It's going to be like the Rocky Balboa statue, like 8 to 10 feet tall. I'm like, yeah, dude, 23 feet tall.
Yeah, actually, the son of Jose Sula recently in Brockton a few weeks ago to accept a replica statue and talk about the plans to finish off that little park area with all kinds of bricks and other stuff. I know that there's, of course, the stuff I worked on should be part of it, too, the plaque honoring Ali Colombo, which was always supposed to go by the statue. I haven't heard anything about what they're going to do with that. I think right now it's at Joe Angelo's bar and grill there. So looking forward to going back when that's all complete. I think they're trying to raise like another $36,000 to get that done. I commented on there's going to devalue them quite a bit. Anyway, the one guy that wasn't there at the Las Vegas Monte Carlo event there was, of course, Muhammad Ali. He had some of his most painful defeats in Las Vegas, losing to Holmes, as I mentioned before, and Leon Spinks, who was there. But according to this article, he spent most of the night camped in front of the bar drinking Bud Lights on the house. So there you have it. Mayweather was there. As I mentioned, he talked a lot about, you know, his status in the sport. The article talked about that. But Don King actually gave some remarks. He said, in America, they wouldn't give a black man eye water to cry with. I had to go all the way around the world looking for money after signing two of the hottest athletes in America at the time. Story about his rumble in the jungle promotion with Muhammad Ali in Zaire. Been joined by Psychic Tom. I'm getting a reading as we speak.
Good evening, gentlemen.
What's up, Tom?
All right. Hanging in there, just getting caught up on the news here.
Well, that was a little weird. I think that was a problem with the, well, I was going to say it's a problem with the cable, but it's actually, I'm looking at the TV, and it had the, you know, the rainbow line on there. But actually, I think it's... Right, back again for the fifth time. Let's see if this works. I don't know what's going on there. It just keeps cutting out. But we'll give it a shot, see what we can do here. But I was trying to introduce a story about Larry Holmes before we connected with Tom there. Larry got a new trophy for his case, basically. They gave him a new belt. He had the IBF. International Boxing Federation, he had a belt from them for his Easton restaurant, Champ's Corner Bar and Grill, which looks out on a future site of his statue that they're going to put up there. I don't know if it's going to be as big as the Rocky statue, but apparently they're planning one. But what happened was he lost the belt over a decade ago, or 3 decades ago. He lost the belt to Michael Spinks. That's who he gave the original belt to, and they were supposed to replace it, and he never got the replacement. So when he got the belt, he said, "This is nice. This is nicer than the first one." So they're taking care of him there, and they gave him a nice new trophy for his restaurant. And believe it or not, the title has only changed hands 15 times since Holmes won it.
Really?
And now they organized. Now the IBF awards the belts immediately in the ring when they have a new champion. Tom is back.
All right.
I don't
Let's
know
try
what
it again.
Hey there, Tom. You're saying it in wicked slow motion.
Boy, yeah, that is quite a statistic, though. 15 times. Wow. Something to think about.
So what were you trying to say to Tony when we first connected with you there?
Well, I was saying I was having a problem with you this week.
Well, we got cut. I couldn't hear. Hopefully we're going to have it together tonight for Dave Thomas. I've been looking forward to this one.
He's got quite a bit of interesting fighters. I'm sure we'll be able to pick his brain on what's stuff going on. You know, the Bellator fight with the UFC is kind of heating up a little more too lately because they just announced that they won the fight with the UFC over Alvarez, I think, right? Alvarez? What's the guy's name? Drawing a blank on the guy's name, but he's going to fight Michael Chandler. And that was the big fight with the UFC in court over his contract. So he's coming back to Bellator, and he's going to fight for the title that he lost to Chandler. Eddie Alvarez, yeah.
Yeah.
So he's going to fight Michael Chandler, who's 12-0, in the co-main event of this Bellator pay-per-view first event. So it's starting to turn into more personal than business here with this first pay-per-view. They've got three people that they've got from the UFC, basically, even though the UFC never really got Alvarez. But they have three people they've been associated with the UFC one way or another on this pay-per-view card. So it's kind of taken on a tone of sticking it in their face with people they could have still had. But don't.
And I also read that Dana White is interested in, he's taking a serious look at signing Ben Askren. So
right.
I find that kind of interesting.
Well, there really isn't much competition in Bellator for Askren, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he'd do that much better in the UFC, but I guarantee you there's people that would compete with him at least.
Yeah,
like
so far I can't think of a minute of any round that he's lost. So this will be interesting if he makes the move.
Well, that would be sort of a slap in the face back at them, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I did watch the UFC Fight Night 26, I guess it's going to be called, the press conference today from Boston. And I don't think Dana has time anymore to talk about Bellator. He's too busy slamming the union there, the culinary union, for all their meddling in this Boston card. Apparently,
well, then
we
also have that city council member, I guess, that wants to make sure no one under 18 can show up.
Yeah, and he claimed that it had nothing to do with the union, but he had a hearing on that, and it's, according to Dana White, 20. Yeah. And made a couple comments. The whole connection between the UFC and Station Casinos, and pointed out that they have 475 guys fighting on their roster that this affects, this campaign by the union, and 250 employees at Zop. And they're doing it by attacking the UFC, which has nothing to do with Station Casinos, and except for the fact that they have common ownership between Lorenzo Fertitta and Frank Fertitta III, both owning parts of both companies. And, of course, it wouldn't be a press conference with Dana White if there wasn't an expletive dropped, so at the end of his remarks on them, he said, fuck them, talking about the union. and his slants on this whole thing, because I mentioned before, I sat down and had conversations with these union people, a couple of them, when I was out in Vegas. And I kind of was doing it to, at the time, just kind of see if I could get an ally in my lawsuit. But I also wanted to kind of pick their brains about what they were trying to do. And it just kind of rubbed me the wrong way after those meetings, the way they proceeded with the intelligence they got from me, you know, with any idea of a partnership moving forward to do anything. But I got the impression from their latest moves that they have no intention whatsoever of doing anything to actually benefit the sport through this campaign of theirs. I mean, it would be one thing, it would be kind of admirable if they were doing all this and calling attention to all these issues with the fighters to clean up the sport or to help fighters, to maybe even create a fighters union. That would be admirable, but the fact that they're doing this just so they can put pressure on the Fertittas to unionize Station Casino makes this whole thing ridiculous. So I don't know what they're hoping to succeed here with this tactic, but I think they're going to turn more people against them than there are people for them. Then the disturbing thing is they've won over some of these other groups, like the National Organization of Women, I think, has assisted with their campaign. And
How did that happen? That seems like strange bedfellows, you know, pun intended, but what's the connection?
Well, basically, the union's been putting out videos and highlighting the stupid remarks that some of the UFC people have made. We had one guy talk about a rape van, and he was quoting some other movie or TV show and trying to make a joke. And they threw him out of the UFC and then brought him back. And we had Rampage Jackson do a rape simulation video and actually tried to dry hump a reporter at one point when he was with the UFC.
So in other words, now feels that the culinary union will solve the whole problem. Got it. Okay. Now I understand. Wow.
Well, I don't necessarily think they've come out and said that they're fully in support of the union or anything like that, or think that they can solve the problem, but they've just joined the fight, basically, against the UFC, saying not women-friendly. Even though now it's Bellator, supposedly, and I just heard that I was getting rid of the women's division while the UFC is trying to build theirs. So it doesn't make any sense, but I think they've taken care of all these issues with stupid comments. And, you know, of course, Dana White's biggest regret, he said, is making stupid comments about Loretta Hunt, calling her a bitch and various other things, and he's had some homophobic slurs he's gotten in trouble for before. So just all around, it's just bad publicity for them. So this code of conduct issue that they've developed and been enforcing, I think, has solved that problem. And, of course, Dana White stopped using F-bombs and four-letter words, but at the same time, he's careful now about who he targets and why. And he doesn't want to turn any other groups against him, because he's got the gay lobby and the women lobby now up in arms against the UFC. And both of them were involved, I think, in New York. I'm not sure how involved they were in Massachusetts, but one of the things they tried to do, the union tried to do, was to block Chael Sonnen from getting a license because of his money laundering issues. Not really much was said about his commentary. I mean, it offended the whole country of Brazil.
You really bring up a good point about this, though, because their whole campaign is negative, negative, negative. And as you said, this would be a great opportunity to segue into a lot of positive things. You know, the fighters pay, the high deductible and the medical. you know, just the arbitrary way that it's run. I mean, it's a perfect, it's a fertile grounds for a union, and apparently they're not even talking in those terms, right?
No, not at all. And I really. Like I said, rub me the wrong way, that this is their attitude towards the whole thing. And
yeah.
You know, they do have the power and the ability, especially the parent company. The parent company is Unite Here, which is one of the biggest international unions in the world. Our union itself is much smaller, and it's pretty much just a local Vegas situation where, you know, they're trying to unionize this one casino chain, which, as Dana White claims, gives them $10 million more a year. But already the union dues that are going to this establishment are paying just to drag down the Fertittas through picking on the fighters, picking on the organization, picking on the events themselves, and the legalization process. So
yeah.
The thing is, led Dana White to say that he's not sure he even wants to come back to Boston after this, you know, under these conditions. So.
So that's not helping any workers in Boston, that's for sure.
No.
And you know, the whole point is it's just negative, just nothing positive here. So I would agree with you. I think this will backfire on them long term.
Hopefully. I mean, I'd like to see them change their tune and maybe go after them with the idea of changing something. But
mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think that's a realistic possibility with these folks. And they've offended quite a few people in Vegas, too, because they've gone after conventions and stuff and musical acts that are supposed to be appearing at Station Casino's venues and charitable events. And it's just nothing but dirty tactics. And you know, I know people complain about unions. I've never heard of a union that would stoop this low to do this type of stuff and not have a real purpose that makes any sense. It does, really. Like Dana White, I'd maybe say this once in a million years, but Dana White has a point.
Mm-hmm.
When he targets that back and says that they're just useless with this, it just doesn't make any sense. There's no connection whatsoever. You can't even bet on a UFC fight at a Station Casino's establishment. So it just doesn't make sense for them to be doing this. So, anyway, it's going to be a subject of a Rant Sports article, I'm sure, in the near future. But moving on here, speaking of Dana White, he's come out and said that he's trying to get Nick Diaz to fight Lyoto Machida at 185 pounds, which would be a drop down for Machida. And possibly a new chance for him to get in the title hunt, because it doesn't seem like there's any way of him getting into the title picture at 205. After the Davis loss, Davis says he doesn't want to rematch him. So this is probably the only option for Machida if he wants to stick around. And if Nick Diaz wants to come back to the UFC, this would be a great opponent for him, I think, because it's not quite a pushover, but it's not quite a, you know, world beater either. I think this would be perfect for him.
And he had talked about going up to 185 in the past, I believe. So, yeah, this may be a good road to go.
And, of course, he's friends with Anderson Silva. So that would be the only problem for him. He wouldn't want to fight him if he's champion. So I kind of think it might all ride on the fight between Silva and Whedon in the rematch to see who's going to be champion after that, whether, you know, this fight goes forward.
Of which Chael Sonnen wants to referee that fight. I don't know if you heard that. Apparently he's made a formal request to referee the Silva-Weidman rematch. What do you think the odds are on him getting the job?
I would think that it's a possibility. It's not just a publicity stunt, I don't think. It's definitely a possibility that they could let him do that, but at the same time, the fighters are the ones that actually get to approve or disapprove of the referee. So it would be up to them, and I don't think Silva would like that.
No.
I don't think it's going to happen. And we'll see. Anything's possible, I guess. I guess it would foreshadow Snake's fight against Shogun. It would foreshadow Sonnen's future, possibly, in the UFC, as a referee and a commentator, which he already does. But nobody can ignore his big mouth out of the cage. So I think it's going to be hard for people to ignore him in the cage. The Ultimate Fighter 18 is coming up, of course, September 4th, the end of the month, next month, actually. And they have 16 men and 16 women will be starting out on the show. And they'll get cut down to half in the very first episode on September 4th. Of course, we talked about the coaches. Kat Zingano was supposed to be a coach, but she had a bad knee injury. And now it's Kate Ronda Rousey versus Misha Tate. And it's going to be an exciting season. From what I've heard, there's a lot of personal animosity between the two of them. And as far as the cast goes, I thought they had released at least the women's cast a long time ago, but I just saw a story this week detailing all the entire cast, male and female. And the oldest cast members for the men are 30 years old, but the average age for the men is 25.5. But here's the roster. For the women, it's going to be all bantamweight, of course, from both men and women. For the women coming on the first episode, we have Shayna Baszler, who's 15-8. Revelina Berto is related to Andre Berto, believe it or not. She's 3-1. We've got Jess 2-1. Tanya Evans. We've got Valerie Letourneau, 4-3. Bethany Marshall, 4-1. Sarah Morris, 3-1. Margaret Penny Morgan, who's 2-0. Gina Mazzini, who's 3-0. Roxanne Modafferi, who's another girl I saw fight. And Worcester, actually against Carla Rosa. He's 15-10. Juliana Pena, 4-2. Raquel, 3-3. Jessica Rakoczy, who's 1-3. And Colleen Schneider, who's 4-3. Then for the men, we have a lot of guys I haven't heard of. Actually, the only guy I've heard of on this whole list is Cody Bollinger, who's 14-3, 22 years old. We've got Christopher Beal, who's 7-0, Louis Fassett, 6-1, David Grant, 8-1, Rafael Freitas, who's 6-0-1, Tim Gorman, 9-2, Anthony Gutierrez, 4-0, Emil Hartzner, who's 4-0, Joshua Hill, 9-0, Chris Holdsworth, who's 4-0, Patrick Holohan, 9-0-1, Sir Juan Kakai, 9-1. Daniel Martinez, 18-4. He looks like the most experienced on the card there. And a few more: Matthew Munsey, 4-1. Lee Sandmeyer, 9-0, and Michael Wooten, 6-0. It's a lot of zeros in the loss column here in the male roster. Anyway, we'll see how that goes. Somebody's always got to go, even though it doesn't count on their records, until they actually get to the finale. Anyway. But we'll see. And I don't know if you guys caught Friday Night Fights last week, but that was a pretty interesting card. A lot better main event this time around. I don't have the names in front of me.
I saw some of the Showtime card. I don't remember the Friday Night cards.
I know there was a knockout in the main event, and I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah, and it was a very good example of basics, how we had one guy keeping his punches very short and economical, and the other guy just wailing, and it was entertaining, but you could kind of see it coming. I remember, and I'm drawing a blank on the names, too. Embarrassing. But by the third round, you could kind of see the handwriting was on the wall. But
oh my God, I'm getting old here.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
You're saying something?
Yeah.
Who was saying what? Tony, you were saying something?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Keep going.
I can't hear who it was.
Huh. Oh. Yeah, I don't know either, but maybe I'll check on that as we go along here. Anyway, see what else we got here. Talked about
Eddie Alvarez. Deontay Wilder, he stepped in there against a guy that really shouldn't be fighting much anymore, and Sergey Blahovic. And I remember turning it on, thinking I was going to, I was like, oh, man, this fight should be interesting. And they're like, we're going to show you the highlights, which is going to be as long as the actual fight. And Wilder destroyed him in minute 14. And you could see Blahovic, his whole body was short-circuiting on the canvas. Like, his arms were going one way, his legs were going another way. And he was pretty much out of it. And it was, I think it's time for him to maybe call it a career. But Wilder looked good. I think he's at, 28-0 with 28 knockouts now, or 27-0 with 27 knockouts?
29 knockouts.
With 29 knockouts. Wow.
Yeah, pretty good. But I didn't get to watch it myself, but I did read about it. Definitely a good hallmark for him to have that on his record and win over Sergey, even though it was fairly easy. Took him out pretty quick. But anyway, Yakovich was kind of old news these days, in more ways than one.
Yeah.
But a story I came across this week, the absence of female boxing. I know we've talked a lot about women in MMA. Of course, one of the biggest women's boxers, Holly Holm, just left boxing for MMA. And now, actually, another former guest of mine, I know, it was before Tony's time and before your time, Tom, obviously, but I interviewed Jackie Callen way back in the day when I just had a MySpace page. And she's just written an article about the lack of female boxers. She says, gone are the days of Christy Martin, Lucia Riker, Leila Ali, and Mia St. John even recently retired. That only two of the top 10 female boxers are from the United States, and that's Diana Prazak, who's number 2, and Chicago's Ava Knight, who's number 7. And of course, she mentions MMA heavyweight. She calls Ronda Rousey the heavyweight champion. Gonna get a protest letter for that one. But I just noticed that now. I didn't even realize that. A heavyweight champion. So, anyway, she does mention an August 15th fight in Costa Mesa, California, being headlined by Ronda Luna and Crystal Morales for the IFBA light title. And they just fought in June, and Luna won the 6-round decision. So, a record of 7-9-1 for Morales. She says it's not exactly the female Mayweather. She's not even batting 500, and this is for a title. So it kind of gives you a picture of, you know, where the women's boxing game is at. And I don't think it ever really caught on that much. I know that, we've talked to Christy Martin before and talked about her career and coming back for that one last fight and, you know, dealing with the adversity that she had with her husband there. And she was probably the most well-known female boxer in the world during her time. She was the first one to be televised on HBO on a Mike Tyson undercard. And, she had a lot of good stories to tell about her career, but I don't remember exactly what she said about the women's fight game today, but I'm pretty sure she was skeptical about, you know, the growth of that and where it was going. So
yeah, because as I mentioned, back in the late 90s, it seemed like things were taking off more, and then all of a sudden hit the wall. Oh, for the main event contestants on Friday night fights, Rustam Nugayev, a Russian fighter, 24-6, lightweight, and he fought Jose Hernandez, 14-6-1. And that's the one that ended, I believe, in the sixth round. But the fifth round, I'm sorry. 1 minute, 38 seconds of the fifth round, Nugayev knocked him out. And he had far better technique, but it was a fun fight.
Yeah, the Nugayev.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did really well. I was very impressed with him, and very, very interested to see what he does next. Another story, I don't know if I have my notes, but I did read about another former guest of ours. What's his name? Rodriguez. Why am I drawing his first name? But he just fought in Monte Carlo, and he had a promoter or manager named Larry Army, and just signed with what's his name? Can't even think of the promoter's manager's name. Al Heyman. I think I have it in here somewhere. Here it is. Edwin Rodriguez from Worcester, Massachusetts. Had a big fight, his first six-figure payday. And he actually turned down a fight with Andre Ward. And I even mentioned this the last time we talked about Edwin, that he could potentially get that fight if he wanted it. And he did apparently want it, but HBO didn't want to set it up for the right time that made sense to him. So he ended up signing with Al Heyman right after he had conversations with HBO. And so now he's connected to one of the biggest managers in boxing. And he's been some mention of some of the other fighters he could possibly face, but his big deal with HBO apparently was that they didn't want to even match him with anyone else if it wasn't going to be Andre Ward. But let me get to that story here. Al Heyman, of course, is sort of a big enemy of HBO too, by the way. And Lou DiBella is Rodriguez's promoter. And Lou's always had a good relationship with HBO, so this is going to be sort of interesting to watch in the future. Heller was actually an HBO executive at one time, but he also has a good relationship with Showtime, so who knows what's going to happen here. But Rodriguez is 24-0 with 16 knockouts, beat Denis Krejcev a few weeks ago in the Monte Carlo tournament. They called it the Super 4 final there. And he signed with Al Heyman last Monday. And he was offered a September 28th bout on HBO against Andre Ward. And that was during a meeting in New York with DiBella and HBO officials. And he actually said, "I think I'll beat Andre Ward." I can mention that Ward last fought in September of 2012, so he's probably pretty rusty. But anyway... HBO balked at by having the fight in November instead of September 28th. Not only that, they said they weren't interested in an alternate opponent like Mikel Kessler, Arthur Abraham, or Lucien Bute. So we might see one of those three on another network if nothing changes. But anyway, they from Rodriguez. He said they just seem to be more interested in getting Andre Ward his next fight. So they wouldn't commit on getting another date for the fight or another fight for me. So we came out not knowing what was going to happen for my next fight, whether it was going to be on HBO or not. It wasn't a good feeling knowing they were just trying to get an opponent for Andre Ward for this year. They were interested in continuing to work with me, but at that moment, their best interest was an opponent. That's the feeling I got from the meeting I had with them. So right after the meeting, Haven called Rodriguez, and I guess the rest is history. They've connected now, and moving forward, he's going to be the manager. And there wasn't really much explanation on why Rodriguez split with Larry Army, but I think it had a lot to do with their money situation. Because, you know, obviously this is right after the first big six-figure fight for Rodriguez. I did read that Larry had not been paid on that fight, and there was some kind of iffy situation between the two of them where Rodriguez wouldn't badmouth him, but at the same time, he really wouldn't explain why he was splitting from him. And apparently the arrangement between them was Army was getting 30% of all the earnings from Rodriguez, so I guess that would be a big reason to part ways. A guy like Al Haymon manages a lot more fighters, so he could probably stand to make a lesser percentage. So we'll see how that works out. But very encouraging for Rodriguez, a local guy from Massachusetts, moving up. Anything from the church mice here? You guys are pretty quiet on this one.
Well, we'll just yeah, go ahead, Johnny.
No, what I was saying earlier, and then we got cut off. I was hanging out with your boy last week, Tom.
Which one?
Remember when we went to the fight last month and the one fighter that I knew there, Paisley?
Right, okay,
I bumped into him last week. He was just finishing a training session. So I was talking to him. He's getting ready to fight on next Friday. He's fighting another guy from that card. And he's saying it's one of the few times that he's watching some film on an opponent. And, we were just talking about, you know, just getting ready and just getting prepared and working the rust off. Because he hadn't, up until last month, he hadn't fought in like 2 years. So, he's working hard. He's in good shape. And I'm probably going to see him again on Saturday. I'm going to buy the tickets right from him. And he's getting ringside this time.
Yeah, he's pushing 40, I believe, isn't he?
Yeah,
so he's got to hit the pedal to the metal now. There's time is the hourglass is disintegrating on him. Good to see him back that quick though.
Yeah. He's saying he had problems early in his career with hand issues. And I know better than anybody how that'll derail you for a while.
And how about Mr. Yergi? Have you seen him?
Actually, it was funny. A cousin of mine sent me an email last week on Tuesday night and says, hey, Wednesday we're having a boxing and football thing at his bar. His bar was about a couple hundred yards from where I grew up. And I didn't get it until Wednesday. He's like, yeah, it was a guy that used to play for the Eagles. Offensive lineman, and then there was the football part of it. And then the boxing part of it was Harry Yergi was going to be there. And I was like, that sucks. I said, I wish I would have known in time, or I would have arranged my schedule to go right after work. I'm only about 3 miles away from his bar from where I work. I totally would have went. But I don't think Harry's, I'm pretty sure he's not fighting on this card. But I looked at it, they got some good fights on there. You know, a couple of guys returning from the last show, and should be a pretty decent card.
Yeah, maybe you can talk to the promoter about getting on our show. If you run into him.
Yeah, well, he emails me all the time. You know, I'm like signed up on his site,
Yeah.
Well, I know we're working on a couple the next couple weeks. So, when is this card coming up, Tony?
Next Friday.
Next Friday. Well, we could potentially have it on next Thursday. I am working on a couple guests, but I have not set a date for them. So, if he could come on next Thursday, I don't know. They're probably going to have a weigh-in that day, though. So, I don't know if he'll be available.
He probably does. So I'll email him, and he's got cards coming up, so we'll get him on for this one. We'll just get him on for the next one.
Right.
It's pretty simple. Genius.
Well, I'm working on trying to get Jimmy Quinlan, one of the UFC vets there. He's actually going to be fighting on a New England Fights card pretty soon here, in a couple weeks, I think. And then the other one, of course, would be Tito Ortiz, who is managed by the guy we're going to be talking to in a few minutes here at 9:15. But then after that, I'm going to try to get some boxing guests. Or before that, it would be good to get some boxing guests if you can get your boy on next Thursday or any week after that. And I have no date set for Quinlan or Tito, so we'll see. What we can do there. But maybe we ought to try to get Larry Holmes on, huh? He likes to talk. So.
Yeah.
I got to get his contact information from somewhere. Maybe set that up. Anyway, big MMA news this last week, actually last couple weeks, has kind of been in the news. Ronda Rousey has talked about I know we've discussed her movie career and, you know, repeating the steps of Gina Carano, who ended up fighting until her first loss and then dropped off the scene and ended up in movies. So we could see the same thing happen here with Ronda Rousey. She made a comment that she might have just 2 years left and then she could be retiring. And, man, did that create a backlash. She ended up getting into a real crazy Twitter exchange with a bunch of fans. And she just blasted a couple people for criticizing her for a decision she hasn't really made yet. She just said maybe in 2 years she might leave. But she clarified in her Twitter remarks saying that basically, she's going to leave the sport when she doesn't have the passion to go to the gym anymore. So, she says her sex talk, the talk of her sex life is off limits. She's kind of been made famous for saying she likes to have sex before fights because it gives her more testosterone.
Well, Rich, what was a lot of the criticism that the fans were throwing her way, that she hasn't defended the title enough and she owes the sport more, this kind of stuff, and she's using the sport as a springboard for a movie career? Was that the gist of it?
I'm sure all of the above, for sure, but I think it was more along the lines generally of just showing a commitment to MMA that she should.
It's awful hard, though, and I think the three of us know just from our experience that you really can't do this for anyone else. This has to come from within, and if it's not within the way it needs to be, this is not the kind of thing, that you use that old cliche, not the kind of thing to hang around in, to say you're hanging around. I mean, if a fighter says they're done, they're done.
Right.
I just don't get that.
See a problem with it.
I feel like you. If she wants to leave, she's achieved everything she's wanted to achieve, and who can tell her what she needs to achieve? Only she knows that, and she's achieved more than 99.9% of her critics. Boy.
Right. And a lot of people would wonder why she hasn't left already. I mean, to be able to balance, you got a TV show that she had to film. You've got movies. She's actually been, she's already been talked about with Fast and the Furious 7. The Expendables 3, she's definitely confirmed for. And she's supposed to be in the Hunger Games sequels, but I haven't heard anything about, you know, whether that's still going forward or not. And she's with one of the biggest agencies in Hollywood, so it's not going to be hard to find her roles, especially when she's going to be able to be more committed when she does retire. So, I mean, when it comes to decisions, if you've got a decision between let's go get punched in the face for real and risk never being able to fight or never being able to be in a Hollywood movie again because your face is screwed up, or, on the other hand, you can get paid way more to fight fake. And sometimes in some of these movies, you might not have to fight at all.
Yeah.
I think most people would take the Hollywood road. So
even,
I think it's admirable around in the first place.
Even if she wanted to do something far less glamorous and far less lucrative, I mean, that's her decision to make. I just, you know, and I remember when Mike Tyson was toward the end of his career, and, you know, his career was going downhill, and finally after he fought, was it Kevin McBride, I believe, his last fight, and then, you know, a lot of fans were saying, you've got to stick with this, and I remember his quote, he says, man, I just can't do this anymore. And then there was all the MMA fans saying, well, if he's leaving boxing, maybe he could go to MMA. And, you know, so there were some voices of reason saying the fire, the pilot lights are out. That's it. He's done. Stick a fork in him. It's time for him to do other things.
That's the thing, but you don't want to fight. I mean, that's your bargain. I remember, and I said this before, and actually I said this in my last job interview, and it helped me get the job. When I was talking to the director of the division, and he was talking about people doing stuff and being burnt out, and I said, I learned the definition of burnout about 15 years ago from Dr. Cox. And Dr. Cox said to him, burnout was when the sacrifice isn't worth the reward anymore. And, you know, especially a guy like Mike Tyson, he was making millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars for each fight. And, you know, but there was a lot of work involved in that. You know, people always talk about, okay, the fight with Michael Spinks, and he got paid like, it was something really astronomical for the time, like $20 million. And he worked basically 91 seconds. And they're like, man, that's how many, whatever, you know, that's like $300,000 per second or something like that. And
now, let's try a decade he had been working.
But look at all the work that you had to put in preparation
right.
for that. So it's
right.
not like you were 91 seconds and you got $20 million. You put a lot of effort and a lot of training, a lot of sacrifice into it. Dr. Cox told me about 15, 16, 17 years ago, it was near the end of the season, and we were all tired, and, you know, we were making weight, and, you know, you're studying, and, you know, because it was hard, you know, trying to box when you were in college, and you had all your college pressure on you, too, trying to finals and all that. And I remember saying, man, I'm burned out, I'm tired. And he goes, no, you're not. Because I'll tell you right now, you're not burned out. He goes, you need a vacation, I'll give you that. You need some time off just to, you know, the season's over, relax, enjoy yourself. He's like, but I guarantee you, after a few weeks, you're going to start training again. And you're going to be down in Philly all summer training again. And you're going to be back here next year busting your ass again because you want a national title. And you want to be an All-American. And he goes, you're still willing to put in the sacrifice for that reward. When you get to the point when you're like, you know what, I don't want to get up and run anymore. I know I don't want to watch what I eat anymore. I know I don't want to cut weight anymore. I don't want to train anymore. I don't want to get in that ring anymore. And no matter what that reward is, whether it's monetary or whether it's a medal or a national title, it's not worth the sacrifice. That's the definition of burnout. And that's what I told this guy, even the director of my company a few weeks ago when I interviewed with him. He said, yeah, we got people here that are burnt out. And I said,
And I said, yeah. I said, at my last job, I was burnt out. I will admit that because I know I would get a paycheck every 2 weeks. But what I had to do with that job to get that paycheck was not worth the paycheck I was getting. The sacrifice was not worth the reward. Just like Mike Tyson there. The sacrifice that he would have to make, whether mentally, physically, was not worth the monetary compensation he would get.
Very, very good point. And I still say there's only one guy. Yeah, and there's only one guy that can answer that question, and that's the guy that's got to make the sacrifice. I wouldn't even think of answering that question for anyone.
Well, according to Mousy, when she first made this announcement, she said, "I am the best fucking fighter in the world, and I truly believe that, but you're still rolling the dice no matter who you are. So I do have to kind of set up an exit strategy. That's what I did wrong in judo. I followed it all the way until the end, and I didn't put any thought after." That's straight from the rowdy Ronda Rousey's mouth there. definitely interesting. I think that, when she said that, she said, "I've got 2 more years to get the ball rolling without me. Tough was the first step. It's not the last one, but the work's getting done." So, I think she's in her, well within her rights, and, doesn't really have an obligation now that the door has been opened in the UFC for women, thanks to her. And so far, like I said, is closing their ranks. They've had released their final 3 fighters the other day. Those ladies are now going to either end up in the UFC or Invicta. And I don't even think Invicta would be possible without ladies like Ronda Rousey out there bringing excitement to the women's MMA game and putting a spotlight on it. And
So Bellator is officially stopped all women's divisions, correct?
Yes.
Hmm.
They released all 3 of their... I didn't even know they were down to 3 fighters, but apparently that's probably the biggest reason why they would shut down their women's division. They don't have enough fighters, so...
And did they give any statement saying why, or just that was it?
Let me find that story here, and I will tell you. I don't think they really had to explain much. I mean, when you're down to 3 people, you can only set up 1 fight at a time.
Yeah, that's
true. You're going to have the same people fighting each other all the time. But I know Invicta does allow cross promotion, and they do it with the UFC all the time. So, and especially when UFC was under ownership, or the Strikeforce was under UFC ownership, they allowed the Invicta people to go over there all the time to fight. But I think they still allow that now. I'm not exactly sure what the current arrangement is, but I know I have this story here somewhere. There it is. Tuesday, they released Jessica Aguilar, Jessica I, and Felice Herrig, Bellator. And they announced their releases via Twitter. So that's how seriously they take the women's division, I guess. Herrig already signed with Invicta. No idea about the other two yet, but... Bellator CEO Bjorn Rebney did issue a press release in a statement on Tuesday evening email confirming that as of now, the promotion is moving forward without a women's division and no longer has any women's fighters. Jessica I, Jessica Aguilar, and Felice represent all that is good in women's MMA, according to Rebney's statement. Both Aguilar and I are ranked number 1 in the world in their divisions and carry themselves with class and distinction, elevating the women's game. I've said many times that fighters need to fight and fight often. Given our current focus, we are not in position to provide these very deserving women regular and reoccurring fights on a large platform, which is basically what I said. That's what Rebney stated in his comment.
Okay.
And I felt, he also said, and I felt it was best to let them go and secure options that did. give them an opportunity. I genuinely wish them the best of luck in their future. Give them. Oh.
Well, that sounds like he took the high road. It makes sense.
Yeah, and he criticized them for it when they really didn't have the ability to give these ladies the fights that they probably wanted to have regularly. So it is what it is there. Not much explanation needed. But Bjorn is just a real class act. I mean, he's not like Dana White when he criticizes fighters, if at all he ever does criticize fighters. I really haven't heard him say much negative at all, except maybe for, some of the... some of the Eddie Alvarez stuff on payments and fighters and stuff and contract issues, he's kind of been outspoken about what Bellator has offered people compared to what they've talked about in the press. But that's the only time I've ever heard him say anything negative. Interestingly enough. I know there's a Teixeira in the UFC, but there's another Teixeira in the news for handing Bob Sapp his latest loss. Everton Teixeira, 3-0, just fought Bob Sapp. Actually, I think I read that somewhere else, but this is the announcement of the fight. I think this is exactly the way it happened with this article. So, unfortunately, we won't get to see much here, as it will likely take one halfway decent punch for Sapp to hit the ground and stay there.
Now, what promotion was this?
Let's see. It says this will be his third MMA fight of 2013. I don't know why it doesn't say this. Oh, OX MMA, the 8th of August in Ceará, Brazil. Heavyweight Everton Teixeira versus Bob Sapp. So these must be some old notes. The beginning of, right after last week's show, I started taking notes about upcoming fights and stuff here. All right, so it's about that time to connect with Dave Thomas. Get them all queued up here. And Dave, a pretty big stable in addition to it. I know for Tito.
Who's Dave?
Hello, Dave.
Hello.
This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron here. We've also got Tony the Tornado Pentacal and Psychic Tom Padgett.
Good evening, Dave.
How's it going? So give us a little rundown. We kind of did a little bit of an introduction for you, but give us a rundown of the fighters in your stable there as a manager and what your promotion is all about, TNT Fight Management.
TNT Fight Management, actually, years ago, we just didn't have a real structure to it. I was managing, I started with Tank Abbott in 1994, UFC 6, actually we started in UFC 3, but unfortunately Frank, Tank went on a little bit of an extended vacation, if you want to call that. Can you hear me, Frank?
Yeah.
Hear you good.
Yeah, he's
Hello?
Been,
Hello?
One of those guys who have been known to take a fight, on a day's notice, isn't he? Or a minute's notice, even.
Yeah, Tank was the baddest man I've ever seen. Believe it or not, there's a new age breed now of fighting. It's a lot different, a lot more skilled. But back in the day, He was a really bad man. So I started with Tank and then moved in with Paul Herrera, Tito Ortiz, Tiki Gozen, Razor Rob McCullough,
Rico Rodriguez when he beat Randy Couture as managing him. There was a whole bunch of them from the beginning, and stepped away from the game a little bit for about 5 years due to a divorce and being a father to my children. That's what was important at the time, and I missed it a lot and got back into it a couple years ago, and I've had an eye for the guys that are the street tough wrestlers and the talent. I think the sport's run by wrestlers, and you just got to have an eye for the guys that can do it. And I feel like I've got a couple of real good guys right now. Brandon Hawksby, he was Daniel Cormier's alternate for the Olympics. Joe Williams, another All-American from Michigan State. He's currently on the reality series. And then my cream of the crop, I got Bubba Jenkins. And that was, that to me was, I think Bubba's probably the best athlete and the most really anybody I've ever seen.
Well, you know, and your team are and try matches on okay. What do you think of that whole dynamic with fighters like King Mo and Tito doing double duty in that situation?
Doing what, Brian?
Doing both wrestling and MMA. What do you think about that whole dynamic and you know, how it's going to work out?
I think it's great. I think it's awesome. When I did put the deal together to get Tito into Bellator, I did that entire deal with Bjorn, and it took a lot of time, and I had to explain and try to make you guys understand that Tito has a limited shelf life of how much longer he can fight. He's been through a lot of battles. He's 38 years old. But reality is, he's a name that I call. If you use his fame in the sport and build it to propel a whole other career, you're going to get an audience looking at MMA and build the sport. I think the professional wrestling is great. I think it's a way for these guys to make more money. It'll help with their acting career. I think it's awesome. I love it. I think whatever it takes to build the sport, I'm a fan of.
Yeah, I think it's kind of funny how we've come really full circle. We used to have guys come from professional wrestling to MMA. Now it's going the other way.
yeah.
I'm all for it myself. I just kind of worry, you know, like you said, with Tito, he's got a limited shelf life. Overall, I think doing both sports have to take way more of a toll on your body than just doing one.
Yeah, it does. Right now, I mean, you're not going to see Tito or King Mo or Rampage jumping off the cage. You know, they're not going to be hitting each other trash cans. They're going to be, I think it's more for just a little glamorous to have a real fighter in there to kind of legitimize professional wrestling. And at the same time, you're building a fan base for MMA. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I can still remember when I heard of MMA for the first time, and my friend was a huge wrestling fan, and he was one of those guys who still thought it was real up until high school, I think. I think it was Dan Severn was the first guy I heard of, and then Ken Shamrock going from wrestling to MMA, and they did well with it. And just
yeah, I mean, Hank did it also.
Right.
I think a lot of these guys that are wrestlers and fighters watch professional wrestling and get a kick out of it. I mean, you have to be able to laugh. If you take it serious, I go, well, that's fake. Come on. You already know it's fake. Enjoy it. Have a good time with it.
Yeah, well, they do. They'll go out of their way to make it look real. You know, I've actually seen the ECW wrestling back at the day when Killer Kowalski was running in New England, and they brought a local show to the town hall where I was living, and they brought these guys all the way through the audience and everything, with the blood, and they were breaking tables, and they did a pretty good job. And you could tell these guys were really getting hurt in certain situations.
Oh, yeah, they are. That's for sure. I mean, the athleticism these guys have to be able to do that is insane. There's no doubt about that. I have a ton of respect for anybody that is doing that sport. I mean, don't be wrong. It's fake. It might not be a real match, but they're definitely beating the crap out of each other. I want no part of one of those guys that's 265 pounds slamming off rope. I'll say that.
I agree.
And they will say, like, the ring has some give to it, but you're still, that's the gravity. Gravity, and when you're a big guy and you hit that ground, it cannot be a pleasant feeling.
Yes, I mean, look at Kurt Angle was an NCAA national champion and an Olympian. I guarantee you, if he wants to hurt you without punching you, he'll hurt you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'll tell you, it was funny about Kurt Angle. When I was boxing in college, I boxed at Lock Haven University, which was not that far from Clarion. Now, he was a couple years older than me. He was already – when he won the Olympics, I was just finishing my sophomore year. And come by the time of my senior year, I really didn't follow amateur wrestling that much at the time. Only part that I knew of it was because my college boxing coach was a well-known former amateur wrestling coach. So they were inducting him in the TSAC Hall of Fame in 98, and Kurt Angle was his inductor. And then a couple of years later, he's wrestling in the WWE. And I was like, looking at some of the pictures, and I was like, oh, this is so unbelievable. You know, the guy that I watch, you know, as a professional entertainer now, as a sports entertainer, was the same guy that inducted my former coach into the PSAC Hall of Fame for wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. That's crazy. That's how I actually met Kenny Cabot. We went to the same high school. I was a lot younger than him. We started boxing again. Boxing gym and doing the amateur, and we started watching the first UFCs. I remember looking at it going, this is fake. There's no way they're going to let you do that. So when we got Tank into it, it was, hey, you know what? If you get to fight three times in one night and not go to jail for it, that's a win either way.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's how the sport started, with those type of tournaments. I don't think you could even do that in a foreign country today. Well, maybe one foreign country. It would be tough.
Well, could you imagine telling the athletes they had to fight three times in one night?
Right.
It's a different deal now. It's more of a sport with rules, more rules now. I respect the heck out of it either way, but, I mean, you got to have respect for those guys who are the pioneers as well, because – just getting in there three times in one night. I mean, when we designed the glove for Tank, it wasn't to protect anybody's face. It was to protect your hands. You could punch somebody for 45 minutes. You definitely get 15-minute fights.
Right.
Yeah, I'd have to say there's just no way you could prepare for a tournament like that. You know, you have no idea who you're going to be fighting or what kind of shape your opponent's going to be in, or who will be. So, exactly.
Yeah, it was brutal. I'll tell you how Tank used to prepare. He'd lift weights, he'd box, and then he'd drink. And why he was drinking, he'd tell you what he's going to do to everybody.
Yeah,
Dave,
I remember hearing a story about him accepting a fight at a bar one time, signing to fight somebody in the middle of having a drink at the bar.
Dave, I have to ask you this. There has to be, you know, because there's so many stories about Tank Abbott that have become public. But there has to be a few that really aren't as well known. And I don't know if you're willing to share any of them with us, but I know there's got to be some entertainment there somewhere.
I'll tell you what, there's been a couple good ones at the UFC. I mean, he's writing a book. It's pretty, names have been changed to protect the guilty, I guess you'd want to call it. but he was a real tough guy. There's no doubt about it. I mean,
oh, yeah.
In comparison, Tito Ortiz was the new breed of real athlete, a wrestler that took wrestling and became a black belt in jiu-jitsu, even though he never got a belt. He tapped out the black belt, and he became one of those special athletes. And the ground is kind of like our. But during a bar or in a cell, was by far the baddest man I've ever seen in my life, hands down. There's no comparison.
Well, Dave, I have to ask you that in Tank's first fight.
I mean,
fight,
you guys have a story.
In his first fight at UFC 6, apparently, I'd heard there was some feud with John Matua. Is there anything to that, or was this just a competition?
No, that was legitimate. John Matua was a bouncer at a club in Orange County called the Cowboy Boogie. And there was words exchanged between the two of them. And, to be honest with you, they thought Tank was going to get beat. Because we were in UFC 3. I got him in the third UFC. I made a deal with Art Davey and SCG, and he was in. Well, they went and sold the UFC to, I believe it was Trimark Pictures. Trimark had it for one show and then sold it back to SCG. I don't know if you're aware of that. So that he was in UFC 3 and they didn't use him. When UFC 5 came out, I was faxing over the contract that Art Davey gave me. I said, you promised me, Art. I said, okay, we'll put you in the tournament. And they told us beforehand, we're going to probably put you against a 450-pound Samoan. And we were like, God, I hope it's Matua, because he was actually training at a club, a little karate place, up the street in Huntington Beach. Mm. He was with Alexander Bear, actually. And so, yeah, there was a definite feud there. And Tank was laughing at him.
Yeah.
He had no fear of John, but at no time did he think John Matua ever had a chance. So,
well, it ain't bragging.
Yeah,
it ain't. Yeah. I mean, it ain't bragging if you could do it. Tank just went out and let his fist do the talking. Yeah.
Yeah, well, the bigger one was Pat Smith backstage. You guys heard about that one, right?
Right, that's the story in the elevator up in Wyoming. Yeah, that's...
Well, you know what? I mean, I'll tell you, I'm on the air. I guess it's been long enough. You can't arrest the guilty anymore, so... Pat Smith started talking shit to Tank after he beat up Matua. And Pat had, who did he have in that fight?
He fought Rudyard Macayo, the fellow from Ecuador, I believe.
And he stopped him in about
2 minutes, and then he couldn't continue because he had stomach problems.
And he ended up getting into the last day, and he ended up part of the kid's back. Yeah,
well,
it didn't continue because,
I think
it was fear.
Right, exactly.
Well, it continued on. You know, it continued on. You know, at that time, everybody had to be a little bit scared. I mean, you think as you would be. I don't know. I was scared, a little nervous for Tank, as tough as he was. I was like, my God, these guys are all, they all got to be tough. They want to fight. But yeah, it continued on that night back at the hotel. We were at we were in Casper, Wyoming, at I want to say a Hyatt or a Hilton. And Pat Smith got into it with a couple of training partners, Paul Herrera and Eddie Reese. And somehow it got confused. And in the morning, walking out the elevator door, I was standing right there. Pat Smith looked at Paul and gave him a, what's up? You want to do this? And Tank wasn't the one to beat him up. Everybody said that Tank did it, but it wasn't. Paul Herrera, legitimately fair and square, just kicked the living crud out of Pat Smith. It wasn't even close.
Wow.
He took him down and took his throat. That was Paul Herrera. It wasn't Tank Abbott. And it was a fair fight. And then Maurice Smith tried pulling Paul off, and Eddie Reese jumped on Smith, and Ole Kakarov sat there watching, didn't do a darn thing.
You know, that speaks volumes about Paul. That speaks a lot about what a tough guy Paul Herrera was, because Pat Smith, love him or hate him, he was no cheap date. I mean, he was a dangerous, dangerous guy, for sure.
Couldn't agree more. He sure was. But Paul Herrera is a different level. Herrera is a Division One All-American, just a third and seventh in the nation. And I'll tell you what, Paul Herrera still coaches out twin boys that are high school, nationally ranked high school wrestlers, and Paul's their coach still. I can't say enough respect. I mean, Paul's trained everybody from Tank to Tito, I mean, to Vitor, I mean, you name it. Paul, and so many people will use Paul as part of it. He's one of the most amazing coaches in MMA, hands down. I mean, I think he's the best coach in MMA. Right now, I've got Bubba Jenkins in his hands and feet. I've got him with Tiki Gozen, and I think Tiki's the best striking coach in MMA. And as far as pound to pound, I think Paul Herrera's the best. I mean, that team right there. I mean, everybody's got their opinion.
Breaking up a little bit.
Yeah, you guys are
kind of
breaking up.
There you go.
Yeah, now we're back. Well, you know, okay. I think Paul's problem was we didn't have weight divisions back then. You know, that whole freak show, Dave and Goliath. I mean, I think if we'd had weight divisions, Paul would have a much smoother road.
Yeah, and I mean, out of all fairness, too, you know, Paul's 13 years sober, and, you know, he has God in his life now, and he's a changed person. He's a completely different man now than he was then. And I remember when he fought Gary Goodrich that night, it was about 5:30 in the morning, and we set down our drinks and on the balcony. I still remember him sitting there with his shirt unbuttoned, flicking a cigarette off the balcony, going, am I fighting today or tomorrow?
Oh, my God.
He was a maniac back then.
Now, Dave, obviously you have a unique perspective from having managed guys and knowing guys that were competing in the first UFCs there and now having managed Tito Ortiz's new contract with Bellator. What do you think about how far the UFC has come and how they treat their fighters these days? Obviously, it's kind of a lot better situation for these fighters than it was in the beginning. But, you know, Tito has been criticizing the UFC a lot and talking about they don't treat their fighters right. So what do you think about that whole situation? Do you agree in that respect?
You know, I think Tito made a very good living and fortunate to have made that money. I have nothing but respect for Lorenzo and Dana. I think Tito's feud is with Dana. I don't think Tito's feud is with how much he was paid. His complaint is the UFC is the brand. And when you're an up-and-coming fighter and you're willing to fight for $1,000 and you do anything to get in the ring with Tito or Anderson Silva or whoever the top dog is in your weight division, you'd do anything. You'd fight him for $500 just to show that you got a name for yourself. And all of a sudden you're there and you're like, wait a second, I'm fighting for $100,000 and I want $2 million. You know, I think it's you got to look at the contract and you got to be smart and you got to have a good agent. And you got to look at the perspective on things, you know, from the standpoint of what were you making before you got there. I got a ton of respect for the UFC. Yeah, they're trying. They try to keep the guys not as big as the brand. It's the same thing. Without that brand, what good are the guys? What are they going to do? I think Tito needed to go. I think Tito's fortunate that he has a place like Bellator. And you know what? It's good for Bellator, too. Jordan Rebney is a very smart man. And the partnership Bellator's made with those guys, Viacom, TNA, and Paramount Pictures, it gives a guy like Tito, lose out. I mean, think about it. You take Tito and set him at a professional tennis match or a basketball game, a pro basketball game, put him in the crowd, everybody knows who he is. I mean, he's a sports icon. He's just not an MMA icon. So you take him and you give him to a guy like Bjorn Revney and Viacom and Paramount with the media channels they have, the abilities they have for marketing, and just it just opens so many doors. He gives them the opportunity. If he puts in the work and he has the ability to do it, he could potentially be like The Rock. That's really what all these guys want to do when they get out of fighting, is they want to have a career. I mean, look what Chael's done for himself as far as being a sports announcer. I mean, he hasn't quite become like The Rock in movies. Randy's trying to. Now look where Randy went. Randy's hired by a company, Bjorn. And when you sit down and you talk to Bjorn, you feel like you're I'm fortunate. I'm fortunate because I got a good relationship with Bjorn. I've got a good rapport. But I think any fighter getting on the ground floor with Bellator, they're gonna make stars out of them. You know what they're doing with the tournament and the channels. And look at what if they start mixing with MTV, and next thing you know, you've got Lil Wayne with Rampage and TNA. Then what do you say? Okay, you know that's stupid. It's not real. Well, okay, really? I don't know. It's not real. But you're gonna tune in.
Cut out there for a second. You still with us?
I think Tito was fortunate to have what he had. I'm with you.
Yeah, we can hear you.
You can hear me okay? I'm good.
Yeah.
Good.
We heard the whole thing loud and clear, but it just cut out for a second at the end.
I can hear you. I can't hear him.
So basically, I agree wholeheartedly with all that. So, you know, as far as Bellator goes, I've really been impressed with the way they themselves. But right now, it kind of seems to me like they're taking things more personally with the UFC than ever before, especially with the way they're setting up this first pay-per-view card. Have you seen that in their attitude? Like, it seems kind of like Bjorn's like a man of action. Like he doesn't stoop to Dana White's level and just insult Dana White from the UFC, like Dana does to Bellator. And he takes these actions where it seems like he's taking the UFC's attacks against him personally, and he's throwing these guys out in pay-per-view and with the wrestling contracts that are from the UFC, or you know, with Eddie Alvarez being a big contract dispute between the UFC and Bellator. All these guys on the one pay-per-view card, do you think that's personal or you think it's just business?
I think it's just business. I don't think it's personal. But, I mean, here's reality. If you look at it, he's taking the top guys in the sport that the UFC is basically throwing to the side. He said, you know what, you guys are done, and they're not utilizing them because they don't want them. And Tito's right. In a sense, they don't want them to be bigger than the brand. And to me, I think from a marketing standpoint, a manager standpoint, to make money with corporate sponsors and brand awareness, I think it's going to grow in Bellator. A guy like Randy Couture, Tito Ortiz, Rampage, I mean, those are three big names. I mean, I hate to say it, all three of those guys are bigger than anybody you have in the UFC as far as a marketing standpoint. I mean, other than you take Chuck Liddell, he'd be the fourth one. I just don't think Chuck's quite as articulate as the other three.
Well, he's been making some waves, too, lately, talking about, basically having the UFC's back and the arguments about fighter pay over there that some media stirred up. And he recently was in the news because he said the biggest mistake fighters are making these days is playing it safe. You know, basically saying you should just always go out there risking a knockout to get the knockout. Which I don't necessarily agree with, but, you know, Chuck is who he is because he fought that way. So.
Yeah, you got to respect him, but it's a different sport today than when Chuck was fighting. It's a whole different game. The athletes are better, and reality is guys like Bubba Jenkins. I mean, look, Chuck's 44, is that right? 45?
Around there, 40. Yeah, I think.
43, I believe. He was born late in 69,
okay.
So he'll be 44 this year.
Okay, so put in perspective, Bubba Jenkins was seventh when he was watching Randy Tito and Chuck Fight. Bubba was 7 or 8 years old. You know what I mean?
Right.
Wow.
He's 25, he's 25, you know, 20 years ago, say 18 years ago, 7 years ago. So the guys today you're seeing that are 20 to, you know, 27 years old, they were little kids, and I think that, you know, them seeing the sport, it's just evolving. It's part of their life. You go into the wrestling rooms, these guys are rolling submission, and they're boxing, and they're just getting better and stronger and faster and smarter. It's just a different level of athletes now. I mean, I have tons of respect for the first ones, the Tank Abbott, the Tito's, the Sharks. How couldn't you respect them? You know, the pioneers in the sport. At the same time, you have to look at what's about to come. It's exciting.
Right. Now, what would you say you enjoy most about being in the management side of things and dealing with fighters on a day-to-day basis and getting them opportunities in these different leagues?
Well, without a doubt, and without a doubt, it's kind of weird you have to ask me. Have you seen the movie Moneyball?
Yes.
Okay. What was it about Moneyball? Was it about the money or the game?
Primarily. I like that a little bit flavor to it, and I'm from Boston.
I'm kind of losing you.
I was just saying I like that movie because it had a real Boston flavor, you know, with the Red Sox trying to get Billy Beane on board with them.
Yeah,
and,
it's unbelievable, but he was about the game, and to be honest with you, I love to be able to take a guy, a grassroots fighter, that's had zero fights, like a Joe Williams, a Brandon Halsey, a Bubba Jenkins. We did it with Tito. We did things. I enjoy being able to pick a guy out and go, you know what? That guy could be a champion. And, I really like to pick some Division I wrestlers. That's where I feel that the cream of the crop is. And being able to know in my mind that I was right by doing this and this and taking a wrestler like Bubba Jenkins and putting him with Tiki and watching his hands develop and become a force, that's the most gratifying part. It's not the money. It really isn't. And yeah, don't get me wrong, to make money is nice, and that's how you keep score, but I would trade the money right and being able to everything I've enjoyed in the game and everything I've been through, I wouldn't trade for any amount of money.
Yeah, it's interesting. The connection with MA has always been very strong. And you see it in every fight, especially this big kind of controversy over the Machida versus Davis fight, where one takedown, or in that case two takedowns, can totally swing the whole judge of the fight. And I think it's something that never really changed. I've seen it in person. At cage side in a local fight where one takedown at the end secured the fight for a kid in a very close fight. So I think a lot of people underestimate.
Yeah, that fight could have gone either way, I think. I mean, still won. I'm glad he won. I'm always rooting for him, but it could have gone. If they gave it to Machida, I wouldn't have been surprised.
Right. Yeah, I thought Machida won, but, I didn't really watch it twice either. I bet if I watched it a few more times, I'd feel the same way that you do. But I just thought, watching it the first time, I thought Machida did a little more in the first round. He definitely won the third round. So I guess the takedowns really had to have been the difference because there was only, you know, two big takedowns in the whole fight, and it was the first and second round. So I guess I also see that the judges would obviously have a problem with Machida's style because he doesn't engage. He's a very good fighter, and he only engages when he thinks the other guy's in trouble or not ready for it. So I think that's more of a critique of him saying, kind of sending him the message that you got to get busy, buddy, if you got to win these fights.
Yeah, Machida's. I'm definitely not a fan of his style, to be politically correct. He definitely does not try to win. He goes out there and tries not to lose.
Oh, Dave, I have to ask you, Dave, Razor Rob McCullough, does he have any plans for making a comeback? Because I'm thinking of aggressive fighters now. And back when I was training, I watched his tapes religiously, and I was a huge fan of his. Is he planning on giving it another try?
You know, I almost had a deal done, very, very close, for him to fight. He's he's a head corporate trainer for the LA Fitness Gyms. And Rob's in shape to fight. He's strong, and I see him in there rolling at the gym almost every day. But I think right now he's focusing on being a good dad and feeding his family. The UFC is paying him good money to train guys on how to run gym programs. I'd love to see him fight again.
Oh, he had the style.
Cowboy Cerrone fight.
Oh man, that would be fireworks. I mean, you just let Razor Rob know he has a fan with me. I just loved his instructionals, and I know Kiki was right there with him in those videos. And this, what you said, this speaks a lot about Kiki's coaching ability too. If you're saying he's one of the best you've seen, so that's good enough for me.
I think Kiki's the best MMA stand-up coach I've seen. There's a lot of good boxing trainers out there, and there's a lot of good Muay Thai trainers. But I think when you apply it to MMA, it takes a special type of instruction, and Kiki has a way to do that. I have nothing but respect for the guy. I think he's great. And that's why I tell all my guys, go in there, move around with him a little bit. It's not going to happen overnight. Do what he says. Go to running off Rampage. You ask Bisping. You ask Tito. You know, they'll all tell you, stand-up's amazing. But it's MMA stand-up. It's the real deal. It's not, let me teach you how to a Muay Thai fight and win on points. It's real MMA stand-up. It's Rampage versus Vanderlei, that type of stand-up.
Yeah, actually, I just heard last week that Shogun Hua started to work with Freddie Roach, the boxing trainer.
Freddie Roach.
And obviously Roach worked with more like George St. Pierre. But with the Hua situation, Hua actually came out and said that it feels like he's punching like Superman now. So.
Yeah, I mean, he's tough for sure.
I think that's one of those situations with MMA where a lot of these guys don't get enough boxing training because it's just not really one of the biggest disciplines in the sport for some reason. That's because you have to deal with so many other things with the kicking, the knees, and the Muay Thai. It seems like Muay Thai is emphasized more than, you know, straight out boxing. But a lot of these guys are now starting to get the idea that, you know, if I improve my boxing game, it'll make a huge difference.
I wish it worked for that. I came from a boxing background. I boxed at 14 years old. And we had check.
Cutting out a little again. Start that over again. Can you hear us?
I can hear you breaking for boxing background.
Yeah. All I heard was, I wish it worked.
I wish the boxing was the save all. I come from a boxing background, and I'm a believer that it helps. But if you can't wrestle and check kicks and apply it to a real fight situation, it's different. That's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, in boxing will help, but it's not a fight, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I come from
on a major stage, it seems to be more of a striking game these days than ever. You know, even though people aren't booing as much when the fight goes to the ground as they used to, it definitely seems like guys are adapting to be more strikers than wrestlers and grapplers and stuff. To me, have you noticed that at all?
Yeah, I've noticed is it's amazing the guys that are really controlling the sport are the wrestlers that have figured the stand up. You know, you look at Cormier, you look at Johnny Hendricks, Chad Mendez, Chael Sonnen. These are all guys that are, you know, top wrestlers that have learned stand up. And what surprised me is so many of these guys that are in MMA haven't figured out what they're doing. I mean, you look at Junior Henry, thinks he's a southpaw. Is he a southpaw?
Are you asking?
Yeah, you think he's a southpaw?
Who? Johnny Henry?
I think he's just a right-handed wrestler. I think it dates back to the same thing that Don Fry used to do. Don Fry was a right-handed wrestler from Oklahoma State. And, you know, everybody's a southpaw. He wasn't a southpaw.
Right.
I think these guys, these wrestlers are learning their boxing, learning their stand-up, and these guys are so worried about getting taken down by them that it's opening up their hands.
Exactly. Now, as far as your involvement in the sport throughout your career as a manager and all that, what would you say has been your best moment so far?
Best moment in the sport. God, that's a tough one, man. That's really a tough one. I think my best moment of sport is probably the last minute I had, but I enjoy every minute so much. There's so much, the first fight with Tank was unbelievable. When Guido beat Shamrock, that was unbelievable. Even down to the lower guys, when Joe Williams won a title of a local show, watching Bubba just win on an undercard. You know, there's been so much there that I say I feel grateful for everything I've had, and I love the sport. And I love being able to pick a guy out and say, this guy is the next guy. And I'm fortunate down the experience I've had. And I think what was the best time? The last one I had with Bubba Jenkins. That would be the best because it was the last memory I had of the sport right now. And it's the most exciting coming from a guy that, from true grit and true heart, that really wants to be the best. That's the neat thing about it. That's why I like the amateur wrestling. Because these guys are doing it because they just want to be the best. And right now you take a guy that's, you know, fresh out of college, that's been doing it his whole life wrestling, and all of a sudden he's going to get paid to fight. He wants to be the next John Jones or the next Daniel Cormier and make $1 million for a fight. And my last moment of the sport was best, watching Bubba. I really can say that. I enjoy every chance I get and everything that the sport's brought to me and my family, and I'm fortunate to be a part of it.
Cool. Well, we're running down to the last 5 minutes of the show, and we still got to do a little preview of the UFC card coming up. You got any final thoughts? Anybody you want to give a shout out to, or anything like that?
Want a shout out to my kids, Justin, Jeremy, and Amanda. My boys are wrestlers; they're both ranked in the state and the nation. I want to shout out to Bellator, thank them for everything they're providing. And, you know, I can give a shout out to the UFC. They provide, you know, they provide the base for it. All my fighters, Bubba, Brandon, Joe, Mario, Nick, even Barrera, who's fought tough, and Bubba Jenkins, who's the future of the sport without a doubt. Bubba's the diamond. Everybody watching to see. You'll see, everybody's going to be surprised. That kid will be champ one day for sure. And, you know, everybody that sponsored us, you know, along the way, has been awesome. Thank you guys for everything. Give a shout out to you guys for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's been a great day.
That's one thing I always put in the back of my mind as a measure of a good guest. When I give them a chance to thank somebody and they thank us. You're definitely a good person, I can tell. So we definitely appreciate having you on, of course. Your perspective is really awesome to get, especially from somebody who didn't even start watching MMA until the 2000s. So it's always good to hear those stories of the old days. And I definitely will keep in touch, and I'll put out anything that you send us over, and we'll keep an eye on all those guys. And we'll hope to have some of them on the show eventually.
I appreciate it. I look forward to it.
So you have a good night, and thanks for stopping by and chatting with us.
Thank you so much. You guys take care.
You too.
Good luck, Dave.
All right. See you later.
There you have it. There's Dave Thomas, TNT Fight Management. Check him out. Tito Ortiz, a really big deal there with TNA and Bellator, and we're going to see the fruits of his labor with setting that fight up with Rampage later this year on the first pay-per-view ever for Bellator. And it was really interesting hearing his thoughts on that whole dynamic between Bellator and TNA. But as I said, we have the UFC card to preview before we go. And if Tony, you want to talk about any upcoming boxing matches, we'll go into overtime for that if we need to. Just, Tom, make sure you stay on the line if we have to do that. Starting off, of course, at the main event, we just talked about Mauricio Hua. Got some training from Freddie Roach, so look for him to have a little bit better striking game against Chael Sonnen. Hua is 21-7 going in. Sonnen is 27-13-1. And I like Hua in this one, but I don't underestimate Sonnen either. I just, you know, he's one of those guys I love to see lose. That's all. That's why I really was...
I kind of feel like that Hua is due for a rebound, but my question is, what's holding me back is what does he have left with the wars he's been through? So,
right. We'll see. Definitely going to be a good fight. I think it's a very nice main event. Chael Sonnen has a couple funny remarks at the press conference today. He mentioned a couple fighters, and I forget who they were, but I think it was one of them was who was original opponent that Sonnen stepped in. And he said, whenever these guys fight, I know I got to get ready because they're probably going to call me because they're not going to end up fighting. But co-main event is Alistair Overeem versus Travis Brown. This is an interesting one. Alistair got asked at the press conference today if he's comfortable being the being out of the spotlight so much. He was 30 minutes into the press conference before anyone even asked him a question. And this fight, I think, is going to put him a little closer to the spotlight again if he wins. Travis has only got one loss, one draw, and 14 wins. And Overeem is 36-12, so he's getting up there with these fights. And, you know, it's only a matter of time before he's going to be back in the spotlight if he wins this one and starts putting wins together after that. So,
yeah,
I'm looking forward to this
one.
I think Overeem's got the ability, but I don't know if.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of pressure on Overeem to rebound, and Brown, I think, is just going to go in and just let it fly. So we could have an upset here.
And then, of course, we've got Uriah Faber back in action. 28-6 versus Yuri Alcantara, who's 28-4. That's an interesting fight. Faber has been all over the place in the UFC, and Alcantara is probably one of the few guys who has as many fights as he does, almost two less. So this is a pretty interesting matchup. I mean, it's almost evenly matched as far as records go. So. We'll see. I think Faber's flames, but Alcantara's got a couple less losses, so we'll see what happens in that one. I like this matchup. And, of course, Mike Pyle versus Matt Brown. Pyle is 25-8-1. Matt Brown is 17-11. Matt is always tough in every fight that he has. It's always very exciting. He's got a tough opponent here, though, and Mike Pyle has been around and had some tough fights.
Yeah. Exactly. He's been around. He's tough. He's smart. But I got to go with Matt Brown. I think Brown's got the wind at his back. He's got the momentum going, but it should be a good one.
And one of the fights I'm going to be watching really close because I've interviewed both guys. I've talked to both guys. Met one of them in person. You got Uriah Hall, 7-3, versus John Howard, 28. And Howard is a Boston guy, of course. I'm going to be rooting for him. Like I said, I met him before at an event in Boston back before he was in the UFC. And this is his second bite of the UFC apple, so it's a big chance for him to get back in the mix. Uriah Hall's original opponent backed out. He was supposed to fight Josh Salmon in a match that would have been the final of the tough season that made him a star here in the UFC, but apparently Salmon had an injury catch up to him. He was injured pretty much all throughout the tough show, and got upset by Kelvin Gastelum, who ended up beating Uriah Hall at the finale of that show. So just a pretty amazing turn of events there that has led to this fight. But Hall has some talents. He looks a little like John Jones sometimes, but he just needs the experience and the discipline. And I'd really like to see him put it all together, because when he does, he'll be amazing. But I think John Howard's going to walk all over him, unless he gets caught. That's the only thing. You can't dismiss Hall for, you know, the ability to throw a spinning back kick or something crazy that nobody's ever seen before and catch John Howard. So I think Howard's going to try to take him down and keep it on the ground. And I think Hall's pretty weak in that area, so we'll see. But I'm rooting for Howard anyway. Whether he has
I believe the odds makers are going with Hall on this one, fairly heavy. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah. If I were still in Vegas, maybe I would bet on Howard.
Mm-hmm.
And we have another hometown guy, Joe Lauzon, 22-8, taking on another tough veteran, the Ultimate Fighter, that is. Not also tough, T-O-U-G-H, though. Michael Johnson, who's 12-8. And Lauzon has been around a while. He's had his ups and downs, but he's never really had a ton of losses in a row, so I think he's going to be around until the...
Yeah, I got to go with Joe in this one.
And Johnson's been very inconsistent. He's one of those type of guys who, if he had a few losses in a row, I would not be surprised if the UFC cut him. But Joe Lauzon, win or lose, is always going to be around, I think, until he decides himself to call it quits. So another Boston guy, I'm rooting for him. I think he's got the skills to win this one. Both of them only have 8 losses, so... and Lauzon has way more experience over Johnson, but you know, sometimes that's a bad thing for fighters, but I don't think it's that bad for Joe. He hasn't really taken that much damage other than a few bad cuts here and there. And we've got Michael McDonald, 15-2, fighting Brad Pickett, who's 23-7. I've seen both of these guys fight, but I really don't know how this one is going to go. Brad obviously has more experience, but McDonald may have more talent, so it's going to be a pretty even fight either way. And we got a couple guys with 2 losses, Conor McGregor and Max Holloway. 13-2 is McGregor, and Holloway is 7-2. McGregor is obviously going to be a big favorite in this fight because it's going to be sort of a hometown fight for him. I think he was born in Boston. He lives in Ireland now, but you know, obviously Boston has a really huge Irish Catholic population. So I think they're going to be big on rooting for him. And we've got another New England guy with New England connections anyway, Mike Brown, who's 26-8, fighting Stephen Seiler, who's 22-10. I'm told Mike Brown actually wrestled at my school, Norwich, so I've never been able to fully confirm that, but... that's what I've heard. So I know he's got some connections to Vermont. So I'm sure he'll have some people rooting for him in that one. I don't really know that much about Stephen Seiler. I know he's fought a few times in the UFC, but I think Mike's been around a lot longer, fought a lot bigger names. So I'll give him the nod in that one. Then we've got Diego Brandão, 17-8, fighting Daniel Pineda, 18-9. Cole Miller, another guy who's been around a while, 19-7, fighting Manny Gambierian, 12-7. Gambierian, you might remember from...
I like Cole in this one. Just my gut feeling.
It's another one that's got... they seem to be really matching up here with the losses. You know, it's like 7 losses for Miller, 7 for Gambierian. So on this card, there's a lot like that. So it seems like that was part of their decision-making process, put these guys together. But Cole's been around a while. He's really good. Gambierian's been iffy. He's been off and on. He's had some good fights. He's had some bad ones. So I don't know about his chances here. Now we've got Oben St. Preux, 13-5, a strike force carryover, versus Cody Donovan, who I don't know a thing about. He's 8-2. And another tough champion, Ramzi Najem, 7-3, versus James Vick, who's 4-0. And I don't know anything about him, and they don't even have a picture for him on Sherdog. So that should say something. So that does it for this Saturday's big event in Boston. I wish I could be there. I wish I could have flown you guys in, but I did have a hearing yesterday on the Zients thing, and they're not contesting my $175,000 claim against the estate. So that's going to go through, but it's just a matter of finding out what kind of percentage I'm going to get out of that $175,000, and I'm betting that's going to be under 10%. So if and when that comes through, I'll definitely set something up. We'll do something big.
Sounds
get
good.
Together for some big. Anyway, before we go, Tony, you got any big fights, big boxing news or events you want to talk about?
Sorry, I was just yawning. I'm one day. I'm just going to blast through everything pretty quick. Friday night fights. Coming to us from... I'm going to piss Rich off when I say this stuff. Yep. Coming to us from the home of the NHL Stanley Cup winners this year, Chicago. Of course, my computer's acting slow now. But it's Andres, 23-2, 13 knockouts. He has a win over Glenn Johnson last summer. Beat Johnson pretty handily over 10 rounds. He's fighting a former world title challenger, Gabriel Campillo. That's an IBF light title eliminator. That'll be pretty interesting. Also on the card, let's see what else we got here. Arthur's, I can't pronounce any of these names.
Stilka.
Yes, thank you. He's 15-0, 11 knockouts. He's fighting Mike Mallo, tough heavyweight, brawler, tender skin. He's 20-4, one draw, 12 knockouts. And then Saturday, I don't really know if we have anything going on Saturday, but we're about to find out. I don't know what the hell I'm doing on Saturday. I don't know Iowa anymore. Oh, Jersey. Fresh off two wins over Felix Stern and Anthony Mundine, world class fighters there. He's 29-1, 15 knockouts. So we lost as a split decision to Mundine back about 4 years ago, which he has since avenged. Darren Barker, his opponent, is 25-1, 16 knockouts. His only loss was 2 years ago to Sergio Martinez by stoppage. He's on a two-point knockout streak since that. What else we got here? That was in Jersey. And then also we got Laredo, Texas, which I watch the show sometimes. That's the drug trafficking king from thin area. And that's Juan Baby Bull Diaz, 36-4, one stoppage to TV, has 18 knockouts. He's just getting his career back. He had been off for about 3 years before he came back and knocked out Fino Cuevas Jr. back in April. He's fighting Dalton Jesus, 30-7, 24 knockouts. So Baby Bull's 29 years old. It seems almost like he's about 89 years old. And that's really it for the big cards. Don't really see anything else all that interesting. Nebraska, Colorado, nothing I'm looking to go to. Oh my God, I almost forgot the biggest fight of the weekend. This is an interesting fight. It's over in the United Kingdom. Is the aforementioned Sergey Kovalev, knockout machine. He's going up against Nathan Cleverley, so somebody else has got to go. Cleverley is a pretty good boxer. He's 26-0, 12 knockouts. Kovalev's a destructive puncher. He's 21-0-1 with 19 knockouts. That one was a it was a technical draw. on a foul. But he's pretty much destroyed everybody since. And he's fought, you know, decent fighters. Capillo, he's fought rather Lionel Thompson 12-1. I really don't know much about Quaroni except that he's a pretty good boxer. I'm looking at some of the guys that he's fought. And certain guys with decent records, Tommy Carpenti's a good fighter. He shut him out, also from judges. Sean Hawk, he stopped him. He was 23-2. Robin Krasnicki, 39-2. He pretty much shut him out. So, the question is, Carol Moran, who's in line to fight Bernard Hopkins, and cleverly pretty much destroyed him, stopped him in 10 rounds a couple of years ago. So, the thing is, like, it's the boxer versus the puncher. And, I mean, it's cleverly going to be able to outmaneuver and keep Kovalev at a distance, and is Kovalev going to be able to neutralize him and, you know, catch up to him, corner him, and unleash those punches? That's what it comes down to. If I'm going to do a prediction on this one, I'm going to go probably with the guy who's, I'm going to say he's the underdog in the fans' eyes, because everybody's really enamored with Kovalev's punching power. But I think Cleverly in his hometown is going to be successful in outboxing him and keeping Kovalev at bay and winning the decision.
All right. Well, that's definitely a lot of fights to watch. Boxing fan, catch him, and we'll see what happens there, obviously. And looks like we're going to have a lot of fights this weekend between that, all that, and UFC in Boston. I'll be trying to watch as much as I can. I'll definitely watch the Friday night fights tomorrow and UFC Saturday boxing matches. But who knows? I might tune in somewhere. But until next week, I think that's all for us. We'll have a guest, hopefully Tito or Jimmy Quinlan or Tony's promoter guy there. Figure something out for next week. We'll definitely have somebody, and we'll have some stories up on rantsports.com about some of the things we talked about tonight. So check that out, and as always, check out fightnewsunlimited.com for latest updates on the fight game. Thanks for stopping by, and adios for me. We're signing off.
Okay, let's enjoy the fights. Lots of them this weekend.
Yes, sir. All right. Sign off.